This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
I'm Sean Duffy.
I'm Harris Faulkner.
I'm Ben Domenech, and this is the Fox News Rundown.
Tuesday, December 26th, 2023. I'm Lisa Brady. If you're in search of New Year's financial resolutions, debt might be a good starting point.
It's stealing from our paychecks and stealing from our margin every month. And if we didn't have any debt payments, we could sure afford groceries and rent a whole lot easier.
I'm Jessica Rosenthal. One state with some of the highest poverty rates and lowest test scores in reading and math is moving in the right direction. It took a village and some money, but kids in Mississippi are giving the whole country hope.
If we stick to something long enough, we can change America. We can change the world. And we're doing that one day at a time here in Mississippi.
And I'm Will Kane, and I've got the final word on the Fox News Rundown.
There's not a lot of optimism for 2024 when it comes to personal finances. In a new bank rate survey, at least, nearly two-thirds of Americans do not expect their personal financial situation to improve, with most, over 60%, blaming continued high inflation for that, though that hasn't stopped America's spending spree.
I think what's happening is you're seeing all these headlines coming out about World War III, the end of the world.
Jeff Sika, founder of Circle Squared Alternative Investments.
So what they're doing is they're spending like they're partying like it's 1999.
Except the bill for this party is $1 trillion in credit card debt, while interest rates have soared past 20%. This college student feeling the pinch.
I have like a considerable amount of credit card debt, and I'm able to just barely manage it.
For some Americans, credit cards have become a necessity, not for luxuries, but to meet basic needs. Among those with financial goals for the new year in that bank rate survey, the most popular is to pay down debt, followed by getting a better paying job or another source of income and saving more for emergencies. But getting a fiscal house in order can be tough.
I think that truthfully, there's a lot of burying our heads in the sand because we don't want to look in the financial mirror.
George Camel is a personal finance expert and author of the upcoming book, Breaking Free from Broke.
And so that the hardest part is just putting it all on paper and looking at the reality of your finances, of your income and your debt and your expenses and going, all right, let's make a plan. And that usually turns into you got to make a budget. And so that's really the big thing. The budget is not this restrictive, you know, nerdy thing. It's just putting your life on paper to look at reality.
It's not fun. As you say, looking in the mirror can be tough. What are some common hidden things that cost people money as they're, you know, setting out to kind of make that list to begin with? Things they may not realize, for instance, that add up over the course of a year.
Well, number one, the myth that debt can be good. And in every instance, I've only seen debt hurt people. And so, number one of the hidden things is just deprogramming this idea that, you know, debt is somehow a tool to be leveraged instead of seeing it for what it is. It's a thief. It's stealing from our paychecks and stealing from our margin every month. And if we didn't have any debt payments, we could sure afford groceries and rent a whole lot easier. And so that's one of the hidden things. Another one is realizing that there's a lot of traps and distractions out there that are actually blocking us from building wealth. And so realizing not every financial tip is actually out there to help you. If you've been on social media scrolling, you got to think about what is the motive and the vested interest of these people that are advertising, you know, debt consolidation and debt settlement, and we're going to help you get out of this with debt relief. These are all traps designed to keep people broke.
Mm-hmm. You kind of just alluded to this, but how important is it to get the credit cards paid off? I mean, that should be the number one goal then?
Absolutely. Credit card debt is at an all-time high in America, $1 trillion. And the interest rates are at record highs as well, hitting 22%. And so that is the debt that has been crushing people. As they call into the Ramsey Show that I co-host, they're saying, hey, we didn't plan on it. Life happened. And we are all of a sudden, we're $30,000 in credit card debt. How do we get out? And on top of that, they have the car payment. They probably have their student loans still hanging around. They might have personal loans or medical debt. So all of this just compounds. And so getting out of debt as fast as you can and cutting up the cards and never looking back, that is the best way to get out of this ditch and start building for the future.
And it's noteworthy that, as you say, a lot of people you hear from are making the point that it's not like they went out and bought frivolous fit things. These are not planned expenses. Maybe because of soaring inflation, you know, in recent months, they had to fall back on credit cards because they didn't have enough of a cushion to rely on when expenses got to be too much. How do we start to get rid of that credit card debt?
Well, for starters, I do have a lot of empathy for people who, you know, they didn't just make a bunch of terrible financial decisions and they bought luxury cars. A lot of them are just trying to make ends meet. And with inflation and the housing market and expenses and daycare, everything just gets piled up and it feels overwhelming. And so the first thing you got to do is just list your debts out from smallest to largest balance, regardless of the interest rate. That is called the debt snowball method. So here's the plan of attack. Make minimum payments on all of your debts except for the smallest debt. On that smallest balance, you're going to take all the margin you can muster up. That might mean slashing expenses. We're going to cut subscriptions. We're going to stop eating out for a season. We're going to pause investing and saving. And all we're going to do is attack that smallest debt with a vengeance. Maybe that means side jobs, selling stuff. And what happens is you knock out that first debt really fast and you get this amazing thing called hope. And psychologically, you feel that win and it tells your brain, keep going. This is working. And that's how I've seen thousands and thousands pay off debt once and for all.
I know a common tip, too, is to, if you can get a zero balance offer for a while, to move one of the higher rate cards to a 0% so that you can have more time and try to make headway on it.
Yeah, there are circumstances in which that can help people get out of debt faster. But what I found is unless they already have that intensity to get out of debt, usually what happens is your brain thinks you actually did something by moving around the pile of debt instead of actually changing the real problem, which is the guy in the mirror, the gal in the mirror, and changing your behavior. So consolidation does have its place, but I found for most people, just following the debt snowball and not playing the games of if I can move the debt around, I will get out faster. So that's really the truth about consolidation is that it can help, but it's not the ticket out.
Right. You still have to sort of knuckle down and attack the debt. What about things like buying the daily coffee, reviewing our subscriptions for all the different apps we have and streaming services and the like? Can that make a dent?
Oh, absolutely. I have a whole chapter in my new book called Breaking Free from Broke, and the chapter is called Spending is Self-Control. And I have a whole piece I walk through of a smart spender plan where you walk through, audit your budget, go through the subscriptions and go, is this really adding value to my life? Am I making this purchase for the right reason? Can I actually afford this in full every month or once and for all? Can I do some more research to figure out, is this the best option, retailer and price? And then lastly, timing. Is now the right time for this purchase or for this thing in my life? Or can it wait another 6 months or a year? And just asking yourself those basic questions, asking yourself that filter, that can help you avoid some mistakes. And it can help you kind of become a minimalist and go, we don't need all of this stuff in this consumerist culture that we have in America where we just need more and more stuff. We need storage units to store the stuff we can't fit in our homes. It's just become too much. And it's creating anxiety in our life and in our finances.
How much weight does a credit score have? Is it more important or less so than it used to be? And how do we improve a credit score?
Oh, this is a controversial one in my book because I actually opened my new book, Breaking Free from Broke, with a chapter on credit scores because I think it's kind of the gateway drug that we raise our kids to believe you need this credit score. It's so important. And without it, you can't live your financial life. And once I got out of debt, I lost my credit score. And I thought, what am I going to do now? And it turns out you can live a great life without a credit score. I was able to rent cars, apartments. I was even able to get a mortgage without a credit score, which is the big fear for people. And so we have to let go and go, what is a credit score really made to do? Well, it's made to help us get more debt. So once you decide that debt is a thief and we want to get out of debt instead of more of it, then you realize the credit score is sort of the scam that only benefits the credit card companies and the credit bureaus and the student loan companies. It doesn't benefit the average consumer. Now, I don't want you to have a low or bad score, but having no score because you've gotten out of debt can be a great thing.
Doesn't it make it more difficult, though, to do something like get a mortgage if they don't have that easy number to go to sort of check how financially responsible you've been or not?
Absolutely. They're, you know, everything's automated these days. And so it's much easier for these companies to just enter your name in and pull that credit score versus having to do, you know, something they did in my grandma's days, manual underwriting, for example, with a mortgage. But I found that even though it might be a few more steps, a little more research involved, it's still a whole lot easier to live without a score than to try to play this endless game of keeping it up and downloading the app and seeing how I can increase it. And why did it go down if I paid off my debt? The whole thing just doesn't make sense. And so while it's been, you know, a challenge in some ways, it's actually helped me build wealth faster in every other way.
The housing market's certainly been tough in general with not enough inventory, rising mortgage rates. What should the prep work be if buying a home is the goal for 2024? Should the focus be on saving for a down payment, for instance?
Well, there's a time and a place to buy a home. And we take some heartbreaking calls on the Ramsey Show when people were told, hey, you got to stop renting. It's a waste of money. You need to buy a home as soon as possible. And they did it before they were ready. They still had a pile of debt. They didn't have an emergency fund. And all of a sudden, they have the added expenses of home ownership. And so there's a time and a place. And to us in the Ramsey world, that is you become completely debt free, get rid of the consumer debt, build an emergency fund of 3 to 6 months of expenses, and then begin saving up that down payment. And I know that might delay the purchase by a few years for a lot of people. And saving up that down payment feels harder because housing has doubled. And so you need to double the down payment, if not more, with higher interest rates compounding, making this even more expensive in your monthly payment. So I understand it may not be a 3-year goal. Home ownership may be a 7-year goal or a 10-year goal even for some people, but it's worth doing it the right way and not before when you're straddled with debt.
I mean, let's assume someone isn't straddled with debt for a moment. Just because interest rates are so high right now, is it a better time to rent or buy?
Well, I want to give a shout out to all of those renting that renting is buying patience. And I don't want people sitting on the sidelines if they are ready to buy a house. They have a great down payment. They're debt free. There's no reason to wait. You know, we always say date the rate, marry the house, to where we're going, hey, the rate can go down and we can always refinance later if rates do go back down to 5 or 4 or 3. And so the right time to buy a house is when you're financially ready instead of trying to kind of time the market. It's like timing the stock market. We just don't know. And usually when you try to time it, you end up making a bad decision that ends up with regret.
What's a common mistake that people make when it comes to good financial health or having your fiscal house in order?
Well, number one is believing that debt is a tool I have to play in order to win. And once you can kind of put that down, another mistake people make is not having patience and delayed gratification. A lot of us, you know, we have Amazon Prime and 2-day shipping and we want it now and we have access to the world 24/7 in the palm of our hand. But building wealth takes time and you want to be the tortoise and not the hare. And too many people are chasing the next get rich quick thing. And I'm hearing from a lot of young people, they're messaging me saying, hey, George, I'm 19, I'm 22. I want to have $1 million by the time I'm 26. And usually when you're running that fast, you're going to fall flat on your face because building wealth is a marathon, not a sprint. And so the mistake is realizing you have time. Don't think that it's too late for you. Whether you're 25 or 55, the best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago. The next best time is today. So let's just take the right next step toward that future we want to build.
George Camel, personal finance expert, author of the upcoming book, Breaking Free from Broke. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Lisa.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
I'm Dana Perino. This week on Perino on Politics, throughout the year, we saw many candidates enter the 2024 presidential race, but only a few are left standing. Fox News digital politics reporter Brooke Singman provides a closer look into candidates' campaign strategies going into the election year. Available now on Apple, Spotify, and FoxNewsPodcast.com.
This is Will Cain with your Fox News commentary coming up.
2023 had some dismal moments, every year does, but here at the Fox News Rundown, we're always on the lookout for those bright spots. When we find them, we try to talk to the people who are making a difference. And this year, there were multiple instances of people specifically trying to help children learn. This past spring, we spoke with the president of the Mississippi Association of Educators, Erica Jones. Mississippi students had some of the lowest test scores in the country, but over the course of several years, Jones helped her state turn things around pretty dramatically. On June 14th, Erica Jones joined us to tell her inspiring story and what other states can learn from them. Now, here's our interview on the Fox News Rundown. Last fall, we got the test result scores from the National Assessment of Educational Progress, and they were bad. After more than 2 years of COVID at that point, which included months of lockdowns and remote learning in districts across the country, the nation's report card showed average reading scores in fourth and eighth grade went down by 3 points compared to 2019. Math scores in fourth grade were down 5 points, and among eighth graders, math scores decreased by 8 points, the most dramatic declines in decades. Education Secretary Miguel Cardona told CBS last October 25th, the scores were unacceptable and appalling.
We've lost our spot. We have to work to make sure that our students here in the United States are number one again in the world. That's what we should be aiming for.
Remote learning and learning loss during the pandemic seeped into politics. And in 2021, a Republican running for governor in Virginia won after his campaign largely focused on education issues, parents' rights, and COVID-era learning policy. When the nation's report card came out, Governor Glenn Youngkin said,
"We must acknowledge the glaring reality that we face together. Our nation's children have experienced catastrophic learning loss, and Virginia students are among the hardest hit."
There were some bright spots, however, and one state has caught a lot of the attention, Mississippi. Previously, with some of the lowest test scores, the state moved closer to the middle of the pack. And according to the New York Times analysis of the data, among just children in poverty, Mississippi fourth graders now are tied for best performers in the nation in the report card's reading tests, and they rank second in math. A Harvard economist told the Times, "The most important lesson here, you cannot use poverty as an excuse. It's so important," he said, "I want to shout it from the mountaintop." So how did Mississippi do this?
Yes. So in 2013, Mississippi started passing laws that would help educators in the state as far as classroom reading instruction went.
Erica Jones is president of the Mississippi Association of Educators.
One thing I know is that for several years, our test scores just really lagged behind the nation's test scores in reading. So our educators in Mississippi worked with our Mississippi Department of Education to really start researching the science of reading to get us moving in the right direction.
Yeah, so we're all hearing about this story of Mississippi improving these reading scores pretty dramatically because of this New York Times piece that highlighted it. It sounds like it took, as to your point, money. A CEO retired to his home state and he started a reading center. This bipartisan agreement to fund education and implement some new rules, and a new state superintendent at that time, back in 2013. And all of that sort of led up to this moment of these higher scores. This took years, right?
That is exactly right. I was a second grade teacher at the time, and I just remember thinking to myself, wow, are we ever going to be able to move this needle? I taught first grade for 9 years, and then I moved to second grade. And as you know, first and second grade are really the foundational grades when it comes to reading instruction. So firsthand, I knew what our students were struggling with, and I knew that this was going to take a lot of work. And I was just so very grateful to recently see and hear the news that we had moved the needle, because I know how hard it was being in the classroom.
We've read also that part of this success is that there was this focus on the science of reading, right? Phonics. I'm sure Miss Rachel on YouTube would be thrilled if she's hearing our discussion right now. But I was talking to one of my bosses about how incredible this story is. And he was like, how did we get away from phonics to begin with? You know, as 80s kids, that's what we learned. That's how we learned this idea of sounding out the letter being so important to reading. How did that How did that shift, as you recall, being a first and second grade teacher at that time, to remembering those basics?
Absolutely. I remember how important fun it was, especially in my own education. And as a first and second grade teacher, you know, fun is just the foundation of teaching students to read. So during that time, I can recall being in my classroom and we were hearing all of this new language, our whole word recognition, those concepts. And it seems as if we were moving away from phonics. But in 2013, that's when we really started to look at the science of reading. And as you all may already know, that when we talk about the science of reading, we're talking about the evidence of what matters and what works in literacy instruction. Research shows us that phonological awareness, phonics, fluency, vocabulary, and comprehension, we call them the five components of reading. Those are the items that are needed to really get reading instruction moving in a classroom.
And it appears, Erica, that math scores are going up as well in the state, maybe not as dramatically, but I wonder, do you think that's connected? And maybe this is sort of a gut reaction response from you, but do you think it's connected to either having more confidence in the ability to learn because you can read? Or is it maybe better comprehension of word problems? Is it all of it? Like, what do you think is going on?
I absolutely believe it's a combination of both. One thing I know as a second grade teacher is that when our students struggle to read, they struggle in other areas as well, because reading is a component that goes across all subject areas such as history, science, as well as mathematics. Yes, our mathematics scores are starting to move. You mentioned the word problems. We know as elementary teachers that if our students aren't able to read, they're not able to read and compute those math word problems. So yes, we feel that improved reading scores impact our math scores as well.
You know, one of the things the Republican-led legislature got through in 2013 was something that at the time I read was controversial, the third grade gate. You'd be held back if you couldn't pass a reading test out of the third grade. It sounds like instead of being daunted by that or calling it unfair, it sounds like Mississippi teachers sort of accepted this challenge and they were willing to, you know, be held accountable and strive for that excellence. Did you get the sense at that time that that was what the response was?
No, not at the moment. In 2013, I remember being in my classroom thinking, what else? What else is going to come down the pipeline? What else are we going to have added to our plates for one additional test as an educator? And so now when I look back over it and I think about it, those laws that were implemented in 2013 were very helpful in getting us to going in the right direction. As a second grade teacher, I questioned the reading gate, if it would be used for the right reasons. And now that I'm looking and reflecting back over that, I do see that that reading gate did help our focus and help to move our reading scores.
Wow. You've said you want to share how you guys did this with other struggling states and districts. And that's wonderful, right? But it can make some of us with small kids, I have a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old, it makes us wonder, you know, a little bit about what happened. Like, did our education system take a step back somewhere along the way in terms of how we teach? You know, whether it was Common Core or watching all of these political fights between teachers' unions and boards and parents and things getting political. Did we lose something along the way? Did we lose the basics along the way? And you guys are coming back to that.
As a K-2 teacher, I often joke with my colleagues, hey, if we stick around just a moment, this will be gone too. So we would joke that, we would often joke that, you know, this is just a phase we're going through. It'll go away. But now that I've had an opportunity to work, it shows that using the science of reading is absolutely the best thing that we can do in our educational system, especially when it comes to reading. I know a lot of fads and trends come along, but this is something that we really need to look at. It's research-based. We can look at evidence as we use the information inside our classrooms.
Just a couple more for you. You know, it's a very political time in education right now. A lot of Republicans get mad at teachers' unions and say that things are not being properly taught in the classrooms. You have a lot of Democratic-led cities and Democratic-led unions saying, we need more resources. You know, COVID really did a number on us. You see these competing narratives in this fight. And at the end of the day, it seems like sometimes what gets forgotten is you just want your kids to learn, right? And so all of this can end up being noise. But the basics are so important. I mean, what do you say, what do you make of the politicization of education right now?
So this is what I have to say, and this is what I think. Nothing replaces a trained educator in the classroom. We know throughout the pandemic, we had our kids at home with us. For me, I had, at the time, a kindergartner, and I also had a son that was in seventh grade. I'm an educator. Their father is an educator, and it was difficult for us. So we can only imagine how difficult it might have been for other homes that were experiencing some of the same things we were. But what I do know, having trained educators who are willing and flexible and willing to embrace different methods to deliver instruction is where we need to be on that issue. We must continue to support our educators, not only in and outside of the classroom, but be there as a community rallying around our students. What we know about our schools, more than likely our students and communities are attending that local school. So why not help that educator in the classroom out by being supportive, by allowing them to learn different methods to teach so that we can get the best results?
Finally, Erica, you know, this is an emotional story for people. And it might feel dramatic to say this, but I'll say it. This is the kind of stuff that you think about, you know, that can save a country, you know, well-educated, empowered younger generations who are not stopped by, you know, a lower socioeconomic status. They met teachers who cared and they learned. And, you know, we talk politically about, you know, competing with China and India and the importance of STEM. But it would seem this is where that starts, you know, teaching kids how to read and how to love learning.
This is emotional for me. I recall traveling to other states, and once someone learned that I was a teacher from Mississippi, you immediately see the facial expression change. And for me, now being able to share what we're doing here in our state means the world to not only to me, but to the educators who are in the classroom each day teaching. What we do know and what we've learned is that if we stick to something long enough, we can change America. We can change the world. And we're doing that one day at a time here in Mississippi.
One kid at a time, one sentence at a time. Erica Jones, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for your time.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network. Subscribe and listen to the Trey Gowdy Podcast. Former federal prosecutor and four-term U.S. congressman from South Carolina brings you a one-of-a-kind podcast. Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com. Subscribe to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com.
It's time for your Fox News commentary.
Will Kane.
What's on your mind?
Hey, it's Will Kane of the Will Kane Podcast. What's going on with Democrat Senator John Fetterman? Suddenly, not only is he articulate, having seemed recovered from his stroke, but suddenly he's unpredictable. He's interesting. Suddenly, he's not progressive. Over the last several weeks, John Fetterman has taken surprising stances, at least surprising compared to his progressive squad caucus members of the United States Congress. He's pro-Israel. He stood firm against Hamas. He lately has said he's going to protect the American worker by standing in the way of a sale of U.S. steel to Nippon Steel of Japan. He's said illegal immigration hurts Pennsylvanians. We need to do something about securing the southern border, which is absolutely mind-blowing to hear from a modern-day Democrat. But maybe even most surprising of all, he's not simply just playing for the team. He's actually calling for consistency, for logical accountability. When asked about George Santos, he said, hey, yeah, but what about Senator Bob Menendez of New Jersey, Gold Bar Bob? What about him and his sins and his crimes? How do we kick out Santos and say nothing about Menendez? What is going on with Jim Shorts, hoodie wearing John Fetterman? Was he never a progressive? Is it now because he's got 5 years till he has to run for office again that he can be, I don't know, unpredictable? Or is it that Pennsylvania is a purple state and he's already getting ahead of his next election? Let's break it down. What is going on with Senator John Fetterman on this week's episode of the Will Kane Podcast, which you get at foxnewspodcast.com, at Apple, or Spotify.
You've been listening to the Fox News Rundown. And now, stay up to date by subscribing to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com. Listen ad-free on Fox News Podcasts Plus on Apple Podcasts. And Prime members can listen to the show ad-free on Amazon Music. And for up-to-the-minute news, go to foxnews.com.
Pull up a chair and join me, Rachel Campos Duffy.
And me, former U.S. Congressman Sean Duffy, as we share our perspective on the discussions happening at kitchen tables across America.
Download From the Kitchen Table, the Duffys, at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you download podcasts.